In this case, we're going to be employing one of Dr. Robert Cialdini's weapons of influence. Dr. Cialdini is a behavioral researcher at Arizona State University. He wrote the book, Influence, The Art of Persuasion. It's an excellent book. In it, he talks about the six weapons of influence and how when you use them, you trigger in people what he calls an automatic response. That is, they'll behave in the way that you want or in a predictable way without the person even stopping to think. Some examples of those six weapons are scarcity. You know this one, for example, when there's not enough of something, everyone wants it. He cites the example of people walking by a sale rack. If there's no one around the sale rack shopping, people are less likely to shop. If everyone else is buying things up and it looks like that the sale items are going to disappear, well, the person will fight their way in to get their share. Some cases, physical violence can be involved, and yet they don't even know what's for sale. It's the phenomenon of scarcity. When we think something's scarce, we simply have to have it before we even know what it is. That's an example of an automatic response. Another one is reciprocation. When someone gives us something, it's an automatic response to try to give something back. He cites the example. One of their researchers every year sends 500 Christmas cards to people she's never met. Over half of them, that is over 250, will send back a Christmas card. Only 4 out of 500, she said, typically will ask who she is. It's an automatic response. Authority is another one. The one we're going to use in this case is called social proof. The principle of social proof states that when in doubt, people do what they see others do. Dr. Cialdini illustrates this with research that actually shows how dangerous it can be to apply the principle of social proof. As you can imagine, behavioral research can be as inventive and creative as the people conducting it. For example, a study was conducted on the streets of New York that used a poorly dressed researcher posing as someone who had just had a heart attack or a stroke. They had him poorly dressed so as to make it unclear if this person was homeless or just less than prosperous. The researcher was sitting on the sidewalk up against a wall asking passerbys for help. Observing researchers noted that if one person failed to stop and help the struggling researcher, anyone else observing that scene, seeing that person fail to stop, would also refuse to stop. It was exactly the opposite if people did, or if one of the researchers did stop to help this person, then everyone else who walked by would help as well. Cialdini credited this response to an automatic program deep within the cerebral cortex that teaches us that safety is found in observing the behavior of others who have already tried what we are now contemplating. In practice, it's no different. When a prospective patient calls asking if we take their insurance, it's beneficial to tell patients what others have done when they've been in this position. When the patient asks, "Do you take my insurance?" I suggest the following script. The patient asks, "Do you take my insurance?" Assuming you do not, the staff person would answer, "No, Mrs. Jones, we are not providers for your group. I would tell you, however, that a number of our longtime patients do have that coverage. They found that it was well worth it to just pay the small additional fee per visit to go outside of that network. We do offer a complimentary consultation with the doctor so that you can find out exactly what it will cost to get care before any services are rendered." Now, this will probably work for you if the person has been referred, and the likelihood of it working increases with the strength of the referral. People want to do what others have done before them, both on the from the standpoint of who referred them and the fact that other people in the practice have done the same thing. So a little push from the outside, that is from a referral, turn it around, and a little pull from you with some of your Cialdiniisms, your social proof, and you're going to get a good percentage of those patients through the door. I would only recommend that you use this script if, in fact, you do have other patients in the practice who have this coverage and have chosen your practice notwithstanding. If you want to take it up a notch, you would then go on to this script. The receptionist responds to the question if you take their insurance. "No, Mrs. Jones, we are not providers for your plan, but let me tell you why we've chosen not to participate." You could then fill in your experience from there. You would tell them how this particular plan has misled patients about coverage. I don't know if you'd use that exact term, but you would simply tell your experience. Now, you have to be careful only to state the facts of your experience with the plan. When some prospective patients are told how the plan coverage actually works, they're ready to go ahead and pay the additional out-of-pocket network fee because they've probably already had this experience as they've gone to other doctors for other reasons. You might ask, when do you take it up from script number one, trying to tell people what others have done, to script number two, talking about your own bad experiences with a specific insurance company? I would say it has to do with the following. Number one, what's the saturation or penetration of this particular insurance plan in your area? If it's 90% of the marketplace, you have no choice but to fight back. Number two, you only tell the truth. Don't color it or twist it to try to make that insurance plan look bad or to discredit them. You tell the truth of your experiences. And number three, you contact your own legal counsel and your own state board to find out what you can and cannot say so that you don't cross the line into defamation or disparagement. And those are the rules. And that's how you fight back. These are the two scripts that will help you reclaim some of this market share. Now, I'm assuming, of course, that you have had bad experiences, plenty of them, with a specific plan before you chose to get away from it. And just a reminder of something we said earlier. These scripts will help you increase your market share. That is, they'll help you get a number of those patients that are in plans in your door, even though you're not a provider. But if you want to capture the major portion of that market share, you are going to have to be a provider and all that that implies. In other words, if you want to get the lion's share of the insurance market that calls in when people ask if you take their insurance, you're going to have to be able to say, yes, yes we do. All right, next, let's talk about the price question. Remember, there's two general classes of price shopper, the reachable and the hardcore shopper. The hardcore shopper is usually someone with a specific neurosis surrounding money. They often fit the category of the person who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. But that's their burden in life, and we need to step back and allow them to carry it. It's actually better to think of shoppers as falling along a continuum. At one end, you have the hardcore, unreachable, and at the other end, you have the ones that are not only reachable, they probably aren't as concerned about price as how the receptionist sounds on the phone. Price was just the first thing that came into their mind when you picked up the phone. We talked about the people at that end of the continuum on our recording last month. We referred to them as compassion shoppers. In the middle of this shopper continuum, you'd find what we call feasibility shoppers. These are people that just want to make sure they have enough money in their checking account to cover the check they're going to write once they get inside your office. One of the ways you identify the class of shopper or where they are along the continuum is the way they ask their question. The hardcore shopper is more likely to ask about a specific service by name. It will reveal the fact that they've already been diagnosed somewhere else, and now they're out to get the best price possible for their treatment. This person's financial neurosis is usually so deeply ingrained that they've come to see healthcare as just another commodity. Now, if your goal is to get everyone, including this person, this neurotic shopper, to come into your office as a new patient, you're going to have to quote them a range of what the treatment could possibly cost. Now, you'd want to make sure that your low-end quote is as low as you could possibly justify. It's this low-end quote that will pique the curiosity of this class of shopper. Then all you have to do is let the discussion drift into the clinically complex explanation that naturally goes along with explaining the procedure and how the ultimate cost is determined. Then transition into the offer for a complimentary consultation with the doctor. One of my clients in Utah uses this script when they encounter a hardcore price shopper for hygiene services, especially for someone that's been out of dentistry for a number of years. The person calls and asks how much it is to get their teeth cleaned. When they answer that it's been years since they were in, the staff person will ask how many bleeding points they have among their gums. And the person asks, well, what are you talking about? They then go on to explain the idea of taking a toothpick and depressing the gums and looking for bleeding points. The patient then starts to get the idea there's really something to this. They then offer a complimentary consultation to sit down with the doctor and have all of this assessed and a price quoted before any services are rendered. And this gets most of their hardcore shoppers in the door. If the caller asks about the price of the exam or the price of the first visit, you have a feasibility shopper. This person will usually respond well to what we call a range quote, that is, from the high to the low of what that service could cost. You then transition them into a complimentary consultation with the doctor. If they get more specific about how this price range is determined that you quoted them, just tell the truth. Explain what determines the cost of the visit, what could cause it to be high or low. it's obvious that the caller can't get the necessary information that they need to determine whether they're going to be high or low on the quote without the complimentary consultation anyway. If you get lucky, the caller will tell you straight out that they're worried that their insurance won't pay for the visit or enough of the visit. This is where you tell them to come in for the complimentary consultation and a free insurance evaluation. I know, once these patients get there and their insurance turns out to be inadequate, that, well, now you've got a whole different set of problems. But if you already have more new patients than you can handle, don't worry about it. Just screen them out. On the other hand, if you don't have anything better to do, you're just standing around, get this person in the office using these scripts.